Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. It was not a quiet week in my town of Unity, New Hampshire, once the word spread that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were going to be coming here. Unity, New Hampshire. Why Unity? I ask. I mean, I think everybody who lived in Unity asked, why Unity? Unity is a town of 1,500 people spread over some of the most densely wooded, rocky territory. That's the dogs. I don't know, maybe you can hear the dogs in the background. Carrying on. I thought you'd like to hear that. That seemed like a good background for a commentary on politics. As I was saying, Unity, New Hampshire is an area of densely covered hills, crisscrossed with many old logging roads and stone walls. In short, it's the kind of area that would cause a thinking Secret Service agent to defecate construction materials. So why Unity? Well, one possibility is the most obvious. Politicians are not known for being particularly creative, and Unity, New Hampshire, would seem like a good place to show the reconciliation that always occurs after any political contest in this country. First, we endure them beating each other up, either directly or indirectly, and then once it's over, they tell us that they're the best of buds. So going to a place like Unity didn't make sense. On a little more deep analysis, Unity was a good location because it does typify in many ways the politician's worst nightmare, and that is the independent voter. Unity, in the primaries in January here, split their vote between the two candidates. They both got exactly the same number of votes, and they both got the same number of write-ins. And New Hampshire has what I consider a wonderful system. When you're voting in primary elections, you can just go into the town hall, tell them whether you want to be a Republican or a Democrat, pick up your ballot, go into the booth, pick up your pencil, mark your ballot, come out, hand your ballot to the keeper of the ballot box, reassert your name, and then walk about 8-10 feet more and change your registration back to independent. If the pundits and the pollsters had been standing outside that January day and listened to the comments of the people filling out the post-voting questionnaire, they would have had a good idea then that they did not have a grip of what was going on in New Hampshire. Most of us who were standing there filling this out were basically chuckling, rolling our eyes, and saying the same thing. Hey, none of these answers reflect what I'm thinking. What should I do? And as in the phone polls, we got the same answer. Well, you can't leave it blank. Make something up. And so we did. But that's Unity, New Hampshire. But there's even a deeper meaning behind Unity that I think really sums it up the best. What I was told when I moved here 20 years ago was that Unity got its name from King George, way, way back in colonial times. And what happened was that King George had a bunch of underlings. I don't know, they were barons or earls or dukes or something. And they were squabbling like normal politicians, and they all wanted the same thing, which is power, which at that time was land. And George got sick of it and said, here, I'm going to give you each some land. Now take it and shut up. And this was the land. And it became known as Unity because, of course, at that point, the barons or dukes or whatever probably said, okay, now this is all solved. Now we're going to be friends. So that was it. They were coming to Unity. As you might have guessed, I have about as much interest in politics as I do in girdles or miniskirts or spike heels. I am not a political person. On the other hand, I am an ethologist. I do study animal behavior, and because of my background in biology, humans are just another animal. And I'm very interested in domestic animals, and humans are the most domestic animal. And besides that, I think politicians are fair game because we're always hearing about their handlers. And as anyone in my line of work knows, where do they have handlers? Dog shows. So I thought, I got to go to this. So then I began the quest, like a lot of people, to find out where this great event was going to be. And I had the advantage here because Unity is so small, there are only so many places it could be. But then the next thing, I thought, I was so naive, you know. I thought I could just drive uptown. Well, that wasn't going to happen. So I started monitoring online to see how this great event was going to take place. And I found out that it was going to be at the elementary school and that you would need a ticket. And you would need to take a shuttle bus in, either from the town of Claremont, north of here, or from an area to the east of here. And now I'm thinking, hey, man, this is getting to be a drag, you know? I got to drive more than 7 miles north to get on a bus, to drive 7 miles to the east to go to this thing when I'm less than 5 miles away from my house. But, hey, for the sake of science, I thought, I can do this. I can do this. I'll just find out when the tickets are going to be available. So I monitored and I monitored, and Thursday morning, there still was no information that I could find about tickets, and I thought, okay, I had work to do. And then I met with a friend who had just come back from a grueling business trip, and we talked for a while. And then at 10 o'clock that morning, I went over to see some good friends of mine who had come from the coast to stay at a family farm. And I love these people, and I enjoy their company very much. And even though it wasn't supposed to rain, it rained, which really isn't a surprise because it does seem that at least this area is well on its way to becoming a northern rainforest for some reason. So I'm over there and we're having a great time and we're talking about everything and anything. And I'm thinking, I got to get home. I've got wood to stack and wood that is getting heavier and heavier and heavier with every rainfall. And I got to go back online. I got to find out about these tickets. And then my friend said, nah, you know, why don't you stay for lunch? I made strawberry soup, fresh strawberry soup. I mean, this is strawberry time in New Hampshire. This is heaven. This is heaven on little bushy plants. Fresh strawberry soup with champagne and just a little bit of sugar. Now, come on, folks. What would you do? You could sit on a wide porch in an old New Hampshire farmhouse looking over at the green fields with their stone walls, watching the rain come down, and eat strawberry soup, fresh strawberry soup with champagne. Or you could go home, log on, and find out about a political meeting, and stack heavy wet wood surrounded by legions of mosquitoes. So I stayed. I stayed, and then by the time I got home and I logged on, the tickets, they were all gone. So I said, well, now what? Well, part of me said, forget it, right? This is the universe's way of saying to you that you are not meant to go for this. But the other part of me is saying, no, this is like too good of an opportunity to pass up. I'm so close. What I'm going to do tomorrow is I'm just going to take the dogs and we're going to get in the car and we're going to start driving until we get stopped at a roadblock. And then we'll see what's going on there. the thing is, unity is not like Rome. There are only very, very few roads that lead to unity, and I happen to live on one. So I knew I was going to hit a roadblock at some point. So now I'm mentally working this through as I do in my anal way, and I start playing what-if scenarios. And of course, my first what-if scenario, since I write fiction, is what if the roadblock is manned by Secret Service agents? Now, that caused me to think, well, first of all, how would I know that they were Secret Service agents? Well, if I saw someone at a roadblock wearing a dark suit, white shirt, and a tie, and had very short hair and no facial hair, that would be a dead giveaway. Or if I saw someone who is just a little bit too L.L. Bean to be local, I'd know that too. But what if they ask me questions? Well, I could do the dumb matron routine and, you know, babble something about wanting to be part of this great moment of history or something. But then I thought, what if they look at Bibi? You know, and they see her, you know, and who wouldn't, you know, with her wonky ear and her funny jaw and the way she acts, and they'd say, what's with the dog? And then I would say, she's deaf and visually impaired and brain damaged. What's that around her neck? Now I'm in deep doo-doo. And I'd say, that's her lighted collar. And the reason I'd start stammering now is because, well, you know, if you had a vivid imagination and you were paranoid as hell, you could look at that collar and think, man, that is an explosive device. And now in my fertile imagination, things are getting really, really complicated. I'm going eyeball to eyeball with a Secret Service agent who's wearing a suit or an L.L. Bean chamois shirt when it's hot and humid and there's a suspicious bulge in his armpit and he's saying, get out of the car and bring that dog with you. And of course, I'd have to get out of the car, right? I mean, what could I do? And it's not like I'm going to pick up three dogs and run, make a run for it from the Secret Service. No, I don't think so. So then I get out of the car, and then they'd take my dog, and then they'd frisk me, and then they'd drag the two of us off into a van. They always have vans, don't they? This van hiding behind the shrubbery to camouflage it, and then they'd drag us in there, and then they'd come out with all this equipment, and then they'd put her collar in this bomb-proof thing, and they'd x-ray it, and they wouldn't see anything, and then they'd say to me, what's in the collar? And I'd say, well, well, to tell you the truth, I don't know what's in the collar. You know, it came, I wanted a lighted collar, this came, there's a battery, and somehow it lights. I don't know, I mean, it's curved, it doesn't look like a light bulb, I don't know what it is, I've never taken it apart. And of course, I'd really be blabbing and babbling now so they'd know. They'd know I was guilty. I mean, even if they couldn't see the sweat pouring off me, they would know this woman has issues. And then they'd take BB's collar all apart, and they wouldn't be able to find anything. And then they'd give me the look. Now, at this point in my ruminations, I'm thinking things like, how much room does it take to waterboard a small woman and a brain-damaged corgi? Is there room in a van to do this? And even if that doesn't happen, if they give me the collar back and, you know, like in a bag of pieces, baby won't have a collar. Then what do? I have to, like, I don't know. I use a bungee cord and strap a little flashlight to her or something. I don't know. So I'm thinking, no, this is not worth it. This really isn't worth it. I know it's a historical moment, and I did want to share with you some of the doggier aspects of politics, of which there are many. Trust me, as a veterinary ethologist who studies domestic animal behavior, political conventions and meetings and primary elections, they are a treasure trove of information about our most primitive roots. You can see our candidates displaying behaviors that are common in the most primitive animal forms. It's like Disneyland for someone like me. Or would be if I could get there reasonably easy and wouldn't have to take my life in my hands to do it. So I stayed home, and Obama and Clinton came, saw, and maybe conquered. But I didn't go. I didn't see anything. And the only thing I conquered was a small section of the stack of unstacked wood that sits in the middle of my driveway.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.